It's very good afternoon. Welcome along to the show. Now, over the last few days, of course, we've spoke a lot about immigration. Actually, over the last 6 months, we've spoken a lot about immigration. As we see, Sinn Féin doing a U-turn after the recent referendum and now saying, yeah, well, maybe we should have more restrictions because, of course, we've got an election on the way and politicians will tell you anything you want to hear at the front door. Yes, now they're not for open borders. They're not for a free-for-all anymore. They want to bring in immigration rules. They also want to sign up for an EU migration pact, which they say will reduce the amount of people coming into the country because the government will be able to pawn off Europe with 25,000 per person per year just so they don't have to take them and they can return them to the nearest safe, what they call safe country. But that doesn't help people to sort out this whole problem. At the moment, currently, there are too many people coming into the country. Many of them, we don't even know who they are. They tear up their passports on the plane and shove them down the toilet, so we've no idea who they are. They're lying to us, telling us where they're actually from. We do need to help those who genuinely need to be helped. But the others, who are economic migrants and chancing their arm, are in Ireland, we're giving them accommodation, we're giving them food, we're paying them money, some of them are staying in tents on the streets, and the thing is, whole thing has turned into a crisis. Now, you would be forgiven to believe that we were the only country in this mess, but we're not. The UK are in a similar mess at the moment. Rishi Sunak is trying to sort that one out, and Joe Biden has created a similar problem in the United States. And when I say Joe Biden has created it, he has created it. It is always reasonably bad on the border of Mexico, of course, in Texas, particularly El Paso. We've all seen the scenes there over the last 10 or 20 years. But it's got considerably worse over the last 2 or 3 years. Tell me a little bit more about the crisis in America and why, how they're dealing with it and what the end result is going to be. Is Neil Munro. And Neil is from Breitbart. He's an editor and reporter for Breitbart. Neil, good afternoon to you. Oh, sorry, I didn't hire you up there. That would help. Sorry, Neil. Good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon to you.
Neil, you know, I'm looking at your Twitter account. I'm looking at some of the stuff coming out from Breitbart. America is in a similar mess when it comes to immigration. But can we put it all down to Joe Biden? Was it any better when Trump was there? Was it any better when Obama was there before that? Or has it got considerably worse?
No. So it's much worse than you think. And the reason I can say that is I've written about 4,500 articles on this subject over the last 15 years. And every, it's like an onion. You got to keep peeling it back and you cry more and more as you go further into it. It's not just the numbers that are deceptive. It's the arguments. It's from top to bottom, front to back. It's a colossal scam and it's designed to steer a huge amount of money out of the pockets of ordinary employees into investors and privileged people like that. It's an amazing scam.
I saw one of your tweets there. You said migration makes Americans poorer and less productive, but it expands our consumer economy and feeds more taxes to the government. So our decadent leadership insists that it helps us compete against China. Now, of course, Joe Biden has been accused of not only just allowing people to come in, but also assisting them by basically using planes to bring people in. 250,000, I believe, more recently. But how does that improve the American economy in any shape or form for the American government, apart from maybe getting Joe Biden a few votes if they're allowed to vote? And I don't know if they are allowed to vote in the election.
No, it is abundantly obvious that migration, inward migration, expands the economy. It doesn't raise productivity. It doesn't raise wages. It doesn't raise living standards. In fact, it makes them all worse. But it makes the economy bigger. It's like eating ice cream all day. Of course, you're going to get heavier, but you're not going to get any healthier. And it's also, it's just, the more you look, the worse it gets. So, for example, we've brought in roughly 2 million migrants a year. These are not geniuses who are going to build robots and make Americans more productive. They're not doctors. Many of them, in fact, are just laborers who are used to fill, to take jobs on the New Jersey Turnpike in the nighttime shift at a 7-Eleven, okay? That's great for the owners of the 7-Eleven shops on the New Jersey Turnpike, but it doesn't do anyone any good because it forces down wages. It forces up housing prices. It makes it harder for Americans to have families, to have careers. It makes it harder for Americans to ever say to the employers, sorry, I'm not working here anymore unless you raise my wages. It makes it harder for Americans to say, you need to take some of your profits and buy machines that help us produce more efficient factories. It just makes the country fatter and slower at the same time.
But I was in Florida recently, and I go there quite a lot. I go to the United States quite a lot. You know, and I see the guys, you know, cutting the grass in the local housing estates, or I see people fixing roofs or cleaning out pools or whatever it is. It tends to be Mexicans or people that have probably crossed the border. And there's an argument, isn't there? And we see it here in this country too, with the hospitality industry and the retail sector, where, of course, you get the minimum wage paid, that, you know, the Irish wouldn't take those jobs. The American won't take those jobs. You know, so we need somebody to do them.
No, you don't. So the phrase, the Irish wouldn't take those jobs, or the Americans wouldn't take those jobs, is to implicitly say those jobs are beneath us. Those are the footmen, the coachmen, the scullery maids of our society. We need to import low status people to take those jobs. That's a fundamentally vicious idea, because what it means is we don't have to respect these people. And then there's the other point too. When I was a kid, the economic classes would say, okay, we're going to be clever, we're going to run an intelligent society, we're going to use machines, we're going to educate our people, and we're all going to get richer. And at some point, we'll be so rich that people won't want to do these dirty jobs. And the first thing we're going to do is we're going to invent machines that can do these jobs. And then we're going to get richer, and then we're going to have so much money, we're going to trade with other countries. So people in Vietnam are poor, but they'll be able to manufacture shoes for us. That way, they'll get rich in their home country and we'll have nicer shoes. Eventually, they'll be making cars and we'll have nicer cars. Trade was going to make the world richer. And it did. China is phenomenally richer than now than when I was a kid. Same with much of the Middle East, many other, South America. But the more we pull people out of those countries to take terrible jobs in Ireland, and in the United States, the slower those countries develop. I mean, what will we do? So instead of developing machines for cleaning roofs or washing windows, we pull people out of Venezuela or Colombia. Well, what that means is in Venezuela now, the young people go north for American jobs, and the local dictator doesn't face any rebellious young men. He just exports all the people who don't like his dictatorship. That does nobody any good. We import a subservient class. We don't build machines. Our own people get poorer. Colombia gets poorer. Venezuela gets poorer. The only people who gain are the people who own properties and who have lots of stocks and investments. It's just a terrible policy for the sending countries and the receiving countries. You can see it in Haiti. In the United States is now trying to restore some sort of quasi-government in Haiti. With one hand, we're talking with various countries. Here, build a police force, build an army, try and create a political settlement. And on the other hand, I kid you not, we're pulling 9,000 people out of Haiti every month. Anyone who has any ambition to be a doctor, to be an accountant, to be a businessman, to be a policeman, a security guard, we're pulling them into the United States for low-wage jobs instead of letting them build up Haiti.
I know Donald Trump mentioned something similar recently when he was talking about, obviously, the electric cars being built in Mexico, and he was going to stop them coming in, or put certainly a huge levy on them coming into the United States to build up the car business in the United States, which has been decimated. Yeah. But Joe Biden seems to have been checkered throughout his three-year tenure so far with more or less assisting immigrants. And you say this is, of course, to build up the economy of America, to make it look good. But realistically, as you say yourself, it's taking the money out of Americans' pockets. But the big thing that Trump goes on about is he uses this word, criminals, people from lunatic asylums, as he says. You know, are there any checks and balances? Are you in a similar situation to the way we are here in Ireland, where people are arriving at our ports with no documentation, no passports, they've dumped it down the toilet of a plane somewhere? Is it similar in the United States, where they're literally just walking through the border?
Yes, anyone can walk. We've had 150,000 Chinese walk through the border. We have no idea who they are. And under a curious feature of American law, if someone walks through the country illegally and they commit a crime and we jail them, say 5 years, at the end of the 5 years, we have to ask the foreign government to take their criminal back home. Well, gosh, they're not going to do so. So we will then be stuck with criminals living inside the United States. But it's really important. the dramatic scenes we see at the border are not the important things. In England, the boat people, it's not the important thing. In Ireland, guys dropping off their identity at the airport is not the important thing. What's important is the sheer volume of people coming in under various illegal, quasi-legal, and legal measures, because that's what drives up housing prices. That's what drives down wages. That's what reduces investment and productivity. We see it in Canada. There's so many immigrants being pulled into Canada by that nice young man, Mr. Trudeau. And Canadians can't get married because they can't afford houses. So the birth rate is going down. And when the birth rate goes down, you know what happens? The business guys rub their chins and say, gosh, we need more immigrants. And so the same thing is happening in the United States.
We're seeing this kind of all over the world, and why this is happening. You know, we're seeing population replacement, as some people call it. And I don't know why it's happening, but here in Ireland, for example, we've a population replacement level of 2.1. That's how many children we need to replace our population on an ongoing basis. We're now down to 1.7. So the argument is that if we don't allow immigration and this mass immigration that we're seeing over the last 3 to 4 years, particularly, that our population will get older. Governments won't be able to afford to pay the pensions to people because our population will be too old and we're not replacing them quick enough. So how do we solve that problem and also solve the other problem of mass immigration?
Okay, first of all, whenever the public, voters, are being lectured to on migration, you have to assume it's a lie. The subject is so incredibly complex. The law is wildly complex. Even tiny little changes in the law can make colossal differences. You have to be shouting at yourself, this man is lying to me. It's very difficult to work out what's going on. And as for population, what the government is saying, oh, look, we've brought in so many migrants that wages have fallen, that people can't afford houses and they can't have families. Therefore, we need to redouble our policy of bringing in more migrants. If you want, which they don't, if you want the birth rate to go back up, you got to allow people to get decent jobs, decent homes, decent circumstances, so people want to have more kids. But our governments don't care about that. The business guys and the investors don't care about that. From their point of view, the more immigrants, the better. Because there's a parallel problem here. Business wants more consumers. They want more renters. They want more workers. That's rational. It makes complete sense. Government wants more poor people because poor people provide customers for government agencies. They create problems, which means politicians can do important things solving the problems they create. And in general, government and business want societies to be chaotic, diverse, constantly changing, so that the public does not argue about wages and housing. They want the public to argue about preposterous things like immigration, or even more preposterous things, transgenderism. They want people to be divided because it's easier to rule them. And so on the question of population, the answer is entirely clear. Men and women want to have babies. Just help them have babies by decent jobs, decent wages, decent homes.
You mentioned transgenderism, of course. That was big in the news over the last week, was Transgender Day of Visibility, which happened to fall on the same day as Easter Sunday, which Joe Biden obviously was questioned in relation to. I saw his press secretary trying to come up with some silly answers as to why it was allowed to, or why the focus seemed to be more on the Transgender Day of Visibility rather than Easter Sunday. Now, of course, Donald Trump was straight out of the trap and he said, we're now going to have National Christian Day of Visibility on the 5th of November, which is the day he hopes to get elected. Did that cause a huge problem in the United States?
So I follow the transgenderism issue very closely here. And it's in a way, it's very similar to immigration, because what the government is doing here is destroying the border between men and women, between sexual normal people and minorities. And they're doing that because it creates more diversity and more chaos. And when you do more diversity and chaos, government officials can feel good about putting out the fires they started last night. Transgenderism is completely incoherent, completely insane, completely destructive.
Look, you try to say that to a person who's transgender, they'll tell you, I feel perfectly fine. I just identify as a different gender.
Yes, no problem. There's two sexes and a million characters. If there's no such thing as gender. If a person wants to dress in women's clothes, fine, no problem. If a person, if some teenager says, oh, I feel like a teenage boy, says, oh, I feel like a woman, fine, no problem. The chief problem comes when the government says, you know, we want to help this 1% of people by changing the rules for everybody else. That's insane.
Well, you mentioned Trudeau a while ago. Canada's gone right down that rabbit hole, really, haven't they? I mean, you couldn't go further down the rabbit hole than Canada's gone.
Don't say that. They'll find new ways. So in the whole transgender issue, there's good manners and decency and respect for the privacy and the private and the autonomous life of everybody. But society we are male and we are female. Male and female are different. They're equal and they're complementary. And laws and customs and norms need to recognize this. That's why women have their own sports leagues, for example. And for government to come in and just wreck these rules in the supposed interest of a tiny minority is civic vandalism. It's like the government...
No, it's virtue signaling, isn't it?
It's worse than that. Virtue signaling implies it's sort of, in a way, harmless. This is vandalism. They are wrecking rules that have supported humans for thousands of years. A simple matter here. Teenagers go through a lot of turmoil in their teenage years. It can be really brutal, especially now because of the cell phones where kids are measuring each other's status by the hour. It's really brutal. And yet the government, by endorsing all this transgenderism lunacy, is making it more difficult for kids to get through the teenage years. Now they're being, instead of saying, look, stick to your studies, try to ignore porn, you'll be an adult, it gets better in a few years. The government's saying, oh, we can solve your problem. Here's a knife, here's a drug. It's really ruthless, it's vindictive, it's destructive, it's scientifically insane. I'm not sure I've been quite clear enough.
I think you've been clear on that. In relation to where they're going in the United States, to say puberty blockers, you mentioned, of course, medication there a second ago, puberty blockers. What is generally the gist of it when it comes to the states in the United States? Are puberty blockers banned in any states, or are they prescribed to teenagers in many states?
In some states, they're curbing them. But the federal government is going in a different direction. It's planning, for example, now to make it economically impossible for schools, K through 12 schools, to have boys and girls play in separate school sports leagues. It's constantly bombarding children with claims that their personality is slippery, and maybe if you're a girl worried about your appearance, you really want to be a boy. Many school systems run secret programs to promote transgenderism without the parents. So, you know, it's
But can that be changed? I mean, Donald Trump has promised to change that within his first 48 hours of office, that he said he will defund any school that promotes this idea. Yeah. But here's the thing. He can say what he wants. Can he do that?
No. He cannot do it without Congress, but the president has enormous influence to push it one way or the other. And it is President Obama who pushed this rock down the hill several years ago. So, like, in this issue, like in immigration, you have to be good and decent towards the people who claim they're transgender and towards the migrants. And sometimes they're correct. And sometimes they're entitled to make their own mistakes. But the way the money flows in this country and over there, it rewards governments to expand these ideas, to expand migration. And basically, in the end, to help these minorities, which there's some obligation to do, they're imposing huge damage on ordinary people, Irish, Canadians, New Zealanders, Australians, you name it. And so for people to understand this, they need to understand what are the incentives on government, on business. If I have a company of 1,000 people, I can make roughly $30 million on the stock market by cutting wages of $1 per hour for every employee. So there's just vast amount of money, and the government has to lean in and say, we're going to protect ordinary people from this. And by the way, ordinary people is not just blue collars. In the United States, we have a massive problem where migrants, immigrants, quasi-immigrants in the form of temporary visa workers, they engage in all sorts of really vicious office politics, where in fact they more or less fire Americans quietly. Some HR person, some lower-level manager will fire an American engineer so he can sell the job to a co-ethnic via back channels. And you're going to have the same thing. You have more Indians coming into Ireland for the
Do you
white collar
still
jobs.
Get? I mean, I know America, one of the first countries to kind of experiment with what they called at the time affirmative action. Is that still the case in the United States? Are they still doing that, the affirmative action?
No, affirmative action now, it's a common thing. You have one set of laws written on the books, and out of those laws spring a vast encyclopedias of laws and rules and practices at individual companies. And then from those rules, you get huge amounts of people arbitraging those rules for their private advantage. And this is mixed in with the money, mixed in with other ambitions. And you get to situations where a huge percentage of American technology jobs are now held by Indians working for Indian managers. So much so that the many top jobs in the American tech sector are now run by Indians who prefer to hire Indians, who prefer to invest and create new jobs in India. This creates massive problems for the white collar sector, for innovation, productivity, for white collar prosperity and kids. I cover these intensely.
I'm surprised they get away with that because I imagine most of the tech jobs are in California, and I'm sure most Americans would like to cut California off and sail it out to the sea somewhere. But I'm surprised that they get away with not, hiring, a diverse workforce in places like California, because California is probably the wokest part of the world, isn't it?
That's why they get away with it. A huge factor in this is journalism. Ordinary journalists do not have the power. They don't have the power, even if they want to reach up to their editors and say, I'm going to write this. Because the editor is thinking, well, I don't know what those guys further up the chain want. And so you get situations where there's a top editor of the New York Times who basically argues, we must have immigration from Asia to ensure that America never becomes a European-oriented society again. That's at the New York Times. So it's over here. Journalists are more or less powerless. They write heart-rending stories about individual migrants and happy stories about some migrants who gets a job, but they can't follow the money. They can't follow the money, even when the administration officials will stand up in public and say on video, this is all about money. They can't follow it. There's very few people who can follow the money. I can follow the money. I love following the money. I've found a huge amount of money. I understand how the immigration system works by following the money. Basically, immigration allows you to slip a huge amount of money out of wages into stocks and bonds, and it's privately distributed to shareholders.
Well, immigration is quite fruitful over here for people who own hotels, who own catering companies, who own accommodation. There is millions, actually billions being paid, even though we're such a small country of 5 million people. There is now billions being paid every year to accommodate, feed, clothe, educate, healthcare. Even we actually spent on 820,000, I think it was recently, on bringing Ukrainians' dogs into Ireland
Right.
and to
Okay.
keep them in kennels.
So now you spend 820,000 on bringing dogs in. Okay, that's great for the airlines. It's great for the specialized companies that transport dogs. It's great for the kennel guys. It's great for the additional worker working minimum wage at the kennel. But most of all, it's great for companies that invest in these things. So if you look at real estate, okay, we have the same problem here. More or less as a sort of standard rule, if you increase the flow of immigrants into one area by 1%, the price of real estate rises by 1%. But if you do it rapidly and suddenly, then, for example, you can get a 1% increase in population, causing an 8% increase in property prices. The amount of money that can be made out of immigration via property is just colossal. In some ways, immigration is a real estate Ponzi scheme. And that way, money is transferred.
But the problem is, Neil, we don't have the real estate. The problem is that we have already had currently we had a housing crisis before this really kicked off. Now, don't get me wrong, we've had, you know, thousands of people coming to Ireland over the last 20 years. But over the last 3 or 4 years, particularly, those numbers have grown exponentially to people seeking international protection, and also 120,000 Ukrainians, which doesn't seem like a lot of people, but for a country with a population of 5 million people that was already in a housing crisis with not enough houses, supply and demand, et cetera, that was a huge problem for us. So the majority of these people are staying in either people's houses, and 800 euro was being given to families to house a refugee, for example. And it's also being given to hotels. So we've got 40% of the accommodation in hotels in Ireland currently at the moment is taken up with refugees, which is damaging to our tourism industry as well.
You use the word problem. It's not a problem. If there's a shortage of housing and you bring in another couple of 100,000 people, the price of housing will spike upwards.
Oh, it has.
Problem. It's an advantage. It's a gain. If you're a landlord, every single migrant that can't fit in the country is a more money. It's just, you keep, it's not, you have to understand.
Well, it may be a financial gain for investors, but it's not a social gain for a country, is it?
Yeah, yes, that's very nice of you. But what drives this is the money. It's the investors. And if there is a profit to be made, $1 billion, for example, by stuffing in another 100,000 migrants, they're going to do it. That's the point. Immigration is not done for the benefit of the receiving society, despite all the rah, rah, rah about diversity and restaurants. No, it is done for the benefit of people who make money by moving people around. The more crowded it is, the higher the rents. The more crowded it is, the higher the food prices. The more crowded it is, the lower the wages. The worse it is, the better it is.
Well, look, it's been a very interesting conversation. I don't know where we're all going to go from here, between here, the United Kingdom, other countries in Europe, and of course America. Well, of course, Donald Trump said he'll sort it all out if he gets elected on November the 5th. That he is going to have mass deportations again. It's all well and good to him to say that. Can he do that even?
No and yes. Migrants are rational. Most of them are decent. A huge number are coming up north because they have poor kids in their home countries, and you and I would do it too.
Yep.
But if we change the incentives here so that wages go up, migrants go home, and then the capital, all the money that the investors have, they're not going to leave it sitting around in a bank. They're going to find a place to invest it. And it's going to go into places like robots and productivity to help Americans do more work and investments in the countries. So Venezuela, it has huge oil industries. It can have other industries. If the Venezuelans can't come up here, we'll send the money down to Venezuela to help them build a better life.
Isn't that what they're trying to do in Europe at the moment with the EU Migration Pact, which a lot of people don't want us to sign up to?
No.
But they want to invest money in the countries where people are coming from, be it Afghanistan, Iran, Iraq, whatever it happens to be.
Stop. It's just a lie. When they talk about investing money in, say, some African country, let's say the Congo, what they're talking about is tiny amounts of money in exchange for pulling out the young people from those countries. So if you're actually growing up in country like Ivory Coast, and the European governments are telling you, come north, come live in Paris, come live in London, come live in Amsterdam, and we'll send $1 million back down to Ivory Coast to create new jobs at a 7-Eleven store. What do you think the result is? People go north. How can you invest in a country when the young people are going north? This is what happened in Ireland for 100 years. People expected to leave. They did leave. And therefore, nobody would set up factories or jobs in Ireland because everybody was expecting the young people to leave. This is part of the scam about migration. They say, oh, we're going to invest in these countries. No, no, no. We will invest far more in those countries if we can't extract their young people for jobs here. We will invest in those countries because we won't have the young, we won't have surplus labor. It will be what we want to make sure the policy says it is in the interest of investors to invest in Irish technology, to invest in Irish homes, to make life better for Irish people, but also to make life better for the developing countries. So if you look at fairly simple examples, El Salvador, we extracted their young people for decades. We left behind a wrecked country where crime was massive and high. Now, for the people of El Salvador elected a guy who has adopted very tough measures and has reduced crime. So what's going to happen next? Investors are going to say, you know, we can invest in El Salvador. The crime rate is low. There's plenty of labor there. There's peace and quiet. Immigration wrecks poor countries. We pull out the young people from poor countries and we leave behind half-empty towns with no hope of investment. It's deeply selfish and destructive, not only here, but there. And it used to be in the industrial economy, you know, you have this memory of Irish people coming to America in the 1800s. This was an empty America where there was literally empty land. There was free land. There was land that was not being used in any way so they could fill it up with population. We were suddenly inventing all sorts of new factories. And we needed people to fill those factories. We're not doing that now. We don't need more migrants. Some migrants are good. Many migrants are good. Some are useful. Too many is bad. And in the case of Ireland, the more immigrants you bring in, the lower the wages, the higher the housing prices, fewer families, fewer kids, fewer machines, lower productivity, and then you'll have more demand for more immigration. It's a vicious circle.
It seems to be. It's been an interesting conversation. People can make what they want of it. It's been a very interesting conversation. I thank you for joining us, Neil Munro, editor and reporter with Breitbart News. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
The multi-award-winning Niall Boylan podcast. Listen live on Facebook, YouTube, and all the usual live stream services. To get in touch, just WhatsApp or text 085-100-2255. The Niall Boylan podcast. They told me to shut up. Available for download from all your usual platforms.